Blog Talk Radio.
You know, we're dealing with a very critical and crucial time. Most crucial and critical times that I've ever witnessed, being as young as I am, you know. We all don't want to say nothing else, so we say as young as we are. Now I want to talk about the pronunciation and the realization. Now the educator, they call it ESP, positive thinking, right? Some of the people on the cross other side of the pond call it vibe, vibration, astrology, and all those different things, you understand? But I call what it is what it is. What it is what it is. Look at him. Now you see, a brother, you take in the ghetto, you find a whole lot of crime. I can understand, hey, I know what it means. Being 9 years old before I got my first pair on the way out of a store. You know, putting on a half-pressed suit from the pawn shop with tennis shoes. Trying to be hip, so I know where it's coming from. Like the fella say, having catfish head stew. And look like the catfish went in there with his head and come out very quick and didn't leave nothing else. Now, it's one thing the educators and the politicians and the establishment got to remember. Now, brothers need jobs. If you don't work, you can't eat. If you don't work, you can't eat. Get hip to yourself, good God, my brother.
Welcome to the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast. It is I, Puma, along with Ice Water. We're going to do something a little different today. Since we missed out on March Madness, what we're going to do is we're going to kind of simulate who we think will win. So this week we're going to get to probably, hopefully, Ice, the Sweet 16 after week one. And right up to the championship game. And what we're going to do is we're going to name the different matchups and then kind of convince each other who we think is going to win up until the final game. How you doing, Ice?
Good, brother. Yourself?
I'm doing good, man. I had to send Black a little text message to make sure he's okay. I said, "You staying home?" He was like, "Nah, I'm living the life." Hard-headed brother. I love him.
Hey, look, that's why he was sniffling and coughing and stuff. That's why I had that new white shirt.
So some things don't change, boy. That's it. That's it. That's fair. All right, man. Let me ask you this. Do you want to get right into this kind of tournament thing and then talk a little bit of sports, or do you want to talk a little bit of sports and then go into the tournament thing a little bit later?
We might as well jump into it because people want, you know, we can still talk about the sports, but yeah, we can jump into it if you want to.
All right. Let's see what we can do here. So we got the brackets, and I know you came up with the different brackets, and it's from CBS. It's from your boy, Joe Larinato. And let's start with the Midwest, man, since we're both in the Midwest. And so he has the matchups of Kansas and Siena. He has Houston and Marquette. He has Auburn and Liberty, Wisconsin versus North Texas, Iowa versus East Tennessee State, Duke versus Belmont, and then you have Providence versus Arizona State. And to round off that bracket in the Midwest, that was supposed to be in Indianapolis. He has Kentucky over North Dakota State. So, before I ask about who you think is going to win each game, any upsets in this bracket? Just a jump. You don't have to give me the upset, but did you call any upsets in this bracket?
Let me see real quick. No.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll go first.
No.
You said maybe?
Wait. Start at one.
Okay.
That's okay.
No, go ahead. I'll go first, and then we'll alternate. So the first game is the easy pick. Kansas is going to beat Siena, the number 16 seed. Just can't see Kansas kind of letting down after the season they have in Azubuike. Don't see anybody on Siena that can handle Azubuike. Who are you picking in that game?
Kansas. That's a no-brainer, I think.
Okay. So the next one is Houston and Marquette. Who you got?
Wow.
Tough one.
Yeah, it is. It's 8-9 seed, which is always tough. I probably would go with the one game gut. I'm going to go with Marquette.
Oh, see, this is what I was concerned about. I was going to go with Houston because I think people have the blueprint against Marquette. And here's the blueprint I've seen against Marquette all year. You stop Howard, Marquette doesn't have any more scores that you could really go to. It seems like when you stop him, you stop that team. You get him in foul trouble, the team stops. They go when he goes. Your thoughts on that? Can I convince
you
different?
No, you can't because, I mean, I'm not saying Houston's not capable. I think Houston can easily win this game. But I think that what Howard has shown you, you know, I think they played Baylor. He had 37 points, and they still lost. But I just think for one game, this would be his last run, and he probably would go crazy because he lost before with your buddy Morant. You know, lost to Morant
mm-hmm.
that game, and I think that's on his mind. And knowing this is his last year, I think he would at least have one game where he would do everything in his power not to lose. And that's why I think they would advance.
Okay, I can go with that. So we'll push Marquette, and they'll be facing Kansas. Good luck with that, buddy. Next game on tap is Sacramento. Is Auburn versus Liberty? I really like Liberty. Yeah, because they're senior laden. But I had to go with Auburn because they've been there last year. They have some players from last year. To me, they should have been in the championship game. Because I think they got hosed by Virginia and those referees. But I had to go, even though it's a 12-5 seed, and 12 seeds usually get 5 seeds trouble, I had to go with Auburn on this one. Your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think Auburn has been up and down later in the season, but I think that their team has a well-balanced team with younger players, and then they have like 5 seniors back on their team. So, and they play well. And I think they still have a nasty taste in their mouth from what happened last year with that call or lack of call, what have you. I think they have something to prove, and I think that's where they'd be able to get past Liberty.
Okay. Next game on tap, we're going to go with – I'll go with Auburn also. So we're going with Auburn. Next game on tap, you got a Big Ten team. Is Wisconsin versus North Texas. Who you got in that one?
Well, I mean, if this is going to be an upset in this region, I think this would be the game. Because Wisconsin is down there at speed, and they play well sometimes. Sometimes the bottom falls out. If they don't shoot the ball well, they could be in trouble. And depending on North Texas State, how they came in, if they were shooting the ball, I think they would be gunning for them. So I'm on the edge. But I'm going to give it to Wisconsin because they have the higher seed. But I think North Texas could definitely give them a run for the money depending on how things play out.
Okay. Wow. Because I was looking at North Texas, too, earlier today. And, like, man, this would be a game that would go down to the wire. And depending on who had the ball last, it could be an upset with 13th and 4th seed. But I'm going to hold off on an upset right now. And I'm going to go with you on this. Wisconsin, just because of the Big Ten and the teams they play in the Big Ten, they could grind this out and send North Texas home. Next game on tap is Iowa versus East Tennessee State. Bruh, this is where I'm picking my upset, with East Tennessee State against Iowa. Because I had a chance to watch them later in the year, and they were hot. They were pretty hot going into the tournament, and I believe they won their conference tournament to get in. And so Iowa kind of up and down all season in the Big Ten, and I can't fault them because the Big Ten is pretty tough this year. But this was the upset that I picked in this one in Greensboro, East Tennessee State beating Iowa. Your pick.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see why you would say that. Iowa's been up and down. They have one of the best players in the country at center of power forward. But they have been on the low, and particularly it's in Greensboro, North Carolina, which is closer to Tennessee. So they can get a lot of support. Yeah, we get a lot of support. I want to pick it, but I think I'm going to flip it. So what I would do is, instead of picking the upset with you, I'm going to say Iowa wins, but I'm going to switch my upset to North Texas State over Wisconsin. Yeah, North Texas
over Wisconsin.
Why'd you switch
it, bro?
Just because when I looked at it, I kind of saw the two teams. I think East Tennessee State is very capable, but something about Wisconsin, and then they're out west too. Something about that that just stayed there. They can be so Jekyll and Hyde, but I think Iowa, they can be very dangerous. I mean, that's a lot. So that's why I switched.
All right, so you want to switch to North Texas, the upset over Wisconsin.
Yes, that's what I'm choosing. Yep.
All right.
And I'm going to choose Iowa. Iowa over East Tennessee State.
Okay. All right, I'll go with you on that one. And then Iowa. Okay. All right. Duke and Belmont. That should be an interesting game. Duke wasn't that strong this year, but got a number three seed against Belmont. Belmont is a senior-laden team. So I'm going to go with you on this one. Who do you think will come out with this?
It could be a very interesting game, but I think Mr. Jones, knowing that he was headed to the NBA and his back is mine without telling anybody, would probably want to showcase. And the last thing he would want to do is go out against Belmont. So I would pick Duke in this scenario.
Yeah, this is the game that I would really love to see how Belmont would handle Duke. And Belmont, to me, this would probably be, for this show, I'm going to pick Duke. But if I was picking, I would pick Duke going out in the first round against Belmont, and here's why. Belmont can play against that zone that Duke likes to get in when they get in trouble. And so, and they have some shooters on that team, and they're a senior-laden team, and Duke is pretty young. And you had Jones, you had Stanley, you had the big man with Duke, but I don't think that was enough to beat Belmont. But for the show, I'm picking Duke because that's the safe pick. But if we were doing our brackets, I would pick, and even in Greensboro, where it's in North Carolina, I would pick Belmont because I think they were ready and Duke was ready for an upset. Duke has been getting upset all year. By different teams. They almost got beat by North Carolina. They got stomped by North Carolina State. I mean, they were dropping games all season. And so Coach K is a hell of a coach, but I would have picked this one as an upset. But we're going to go with Iowa and Duke in the next round. The next game on tap is Providence versus Arizona State. I'm going with Providence. We've been watching them all year. They were beating top 25 teams left and right all season, deserved to be there, should have got a higher seed, but their record didn't kind of say that. But love Arizona State with Remy Martin and what Hurley's been able to do with that team. But I thought their team last year and the year before was stronger than this team this year. Who's your choice in this game?
Yeah, I think Arizona State can get Providence all they wanted because Providence is Jekyll and Hyde as well. When they're playing well, they can hang or play with anybody, but then they also that team they can lose by 20. And I know that's just how that works for them, playing hell of a conference. So, but I'm still going to go with Providence to advance.
Okay. So we have Providence. And then last game in that first round in that bracket in St. Louis, Kentucky versus North Dakota State. Who you got?
I'm going with Kentucky. I know a lot of people think that they having a down year, which they are, but this is Calipari's moment. He loves to be down, and he loves for them to not be, even though you said 2-seed, they have not played real well. They played up and down, even though they got the 2-seed. This would be a perfect opportunity to kind of make a little run, so I think Kentucky would advance.
All right. We're going to take a break and go to the west bracket side of the bracket in bracketology with Joe Larinati. And let me preview some of the teams and games there before we go to break. You have Gonzaga, LSU, Oklahoma, Michigan, Yale. You have Oregon, BYU, Indiana, Seton Hall, Arizona, and San Diego State. This should be very, very, very interesting. This is the Goon Squad. We'll be right back simulating the March Madness tournament.
Well, all right. Starchild, citizens of the universe, recording angels. We have returned to claim the pyramid. Partying on the mothership. I am the mothership connection. Get down in 3D. Light year groove. Well, all right. You hear the noise? Ain't nobody but me and the boy. Get down. Hit it, fellas. Fries and dip in your hip and come on to the mothership. Loose boots, doing the bump. Hustle on over here.
Welcome back to the Goon Squad Sports Radio Show. We're doing a simulated pick, if you will, of the national championship, heading to the national championship with March Madness. We're taking a bracket from CBS Sports with Joe Larinati, the teams that he picked to go to the tournament, and we're working from there. We just went through the Midwest side or the Midwest side of the bracket. We're going to the West now, and that's in Los Angeles. And the first game that is on tap is Gonzaga versus either Prairie View or North Carolina Central. Go ahead, Ice. Who do you think is going to win? Well, it's a no-brainer that Gonzaga is the number one seed, but any surprises here with Gonzaga going up against either North Carolina Central or Prairie View A&M?
No, I don't think so at all. I think Gonzaga being out west, they'll be comfortable. Their teams will be a lot physically larger than these teams, either one of these teams, HBCU teams, and I think they would kind of walk away with that easy first win in the first round.
Yeah, I think this Gonzaga team reminds me of that team that played North Carolina in the championship. And good guard play, got some guys down low in the front court that can really pound inside. So these teams will really have a hard time beating Gonzaga. Gonzaga will sail in a victory here. LSU versus Oklahoma. I'm going to go with the number 8 seed LSU. Had a chance to watch them play in the SEC, and they're a pretty tough team. Like Oklahoma, but, I think LSU would get them. And both of these teams have some pedigree in the tournament. But I got to go with LSU based on being in the SEC and playing those tough teams. Even though Oklahoma plays tough teams in their conference, I think LSU gets the nod here. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think in regards to the pedigree, I think LSU probably has the better pedigree. I might be wrong about that, but as far as the schedule and who they play with the victories. I know Oklahoma, I think I remember I was watching, they had a must-win game they wanted to win versus Texas, and they came up short. Texas didn't have the best season. They were able to defeat them. So, I would take LSU as well.
All right. So we got through those two teams or two games. Michigan versus Yale. This is the classic 5 and 12. You have the Ivy League versus the Big Ten. Let's see. Who you got?
Wow, this is tough. Because I know a lot of people were high on Yale as to what they do and how they play.
Yes.
I'm going to pick Yale. It's early in the year, earlier in the team. And I think it's in Spokane, just different type of flavor. I think this is perfect for, particularly if it was in the afternoon. I don't know what time. I should be out west, so it won't be early. But, yeah, I would go with, I'm going to go with Yale to upset Michigan.
Actually, I thought I was going to fight you on this one, but I actually went to upset with Michigan. I saw Michigan earlier this year, and this is a little step up for Juwan Howard as far as the coach and coaching the tournament. I know he had a lot of experience as a player, but trying to get your team to play, especially against a team, Yale, very efficient team, and this is one of the upsets that we were picking in the brackets that I would have chose against you in Black and see whether or not I know Black has seen a lot of Yale being in New Haven, Connecticut, and whether or not he would have kind of chose them too. So we moved Yale on past Michigan, which a lot of Big Ten people would not agree with, but this is our simulation. Next game is Oregon versus New Mexico State. Got to go with Oregon, the number 4 seed. And who you got in this one?
New Mexico State has talent. But I don't think it depends on the way that Oregon shoots. If they have a good shooting day, I think they run away with it. They struggle a little bit with a shooting percentage, field goal percentage. I think it could be tough. But even with that being said, it's out west, too close to Oregon. I'm going to go with Oregon.
Okay. Next game on tap. This is a team that's been up and down all season. Number 3, Seton Hall versus Eastern Washington. I'm going to go with Seton Hall on this one. And I skipped one, but we'll get back to that. Yeah, I got the other one. I'll go back to that one. Who do you like in this one, in Seton Hall and Eastern Washington?
Eastern Washington is a pretty good team, but Seton Hall is I've been impressed with them when they want to play. They faced a lot of adversity this year, which is why I think they received that third seed ranking. So I would take Seton Hall in this particular contest.
Okay. I would go with Seton Hall too. And I got to go with Miles Powell and McKnight. That team, even though those guys have struggled sometimes, foul trouble, they struggle through the season. Other players, I've seen them step up on that team, and they seem very hungry. Let's go back to BYU and Indiana. BYU, the number 6 team in Indiana, which I didn't think was going to get to the tournament. Got into the tournament with a number 11 seed. Based on their schedule and who they play and the tough schedule they have, I'm going to go with Indiana in the first round. Your thoughts on that?
You must be reading my mind. Are you trying to get show points? Anyway, BYU is a very good team, but I think them traveling way across country and having to play Indiana team, as you mentioned, Indiana's played a lot of teams. They beat San Diego State. They beat Ohio State. They beat a number of quality teams that are in the tournament. And I think that in the right situation, unless BYU is just shooting lights out, Indiana could find a way to win this game. Because I think they're a lot better than the way that they play sometimes, talent-wise. So I would choose Indiana as well.
Okay. Moving on to Sacramento, you have Arizona versus Texas Tech. Who you got?
Wow, this is a tough game. Because I was watching Arizona play, who the heck was that? Somebody in their conference, and they ended up squeaking the game out. But, wow, John Miller, Sacramento. I'm going to go with the upset. I'm going to choose Texas Tech because this is perfect for them. Perfect for them.
Yep.
They didn't get it last year, but I think Arizona is not as stable. They have some very good young players, I think, who may be thinking too much about the NBA right now, and I think Texas Tech would be perfect to kind of go in there and dismantle, catch them sleeping, and beat them. So Texas Tech.
Yeah, I'm thinking of upset too with this one, with Arizona, with Texas Tech. Got a chance to see Texas Tech and their team. Now, I don't think a lot of teams want to play right now in the tournament. And so Arizona, I wasn't really impressed with Arizona and how they kind of finished up the season, even though they got the number 7 seed. You know, I just wasn't impressed with them, and I thought Texas Tech could get them being a number 10th seed. And, of course, San Diego State, who could have been a number 1 seed, going up against number 15 seed, UC Irvine. This could be an upset, but I think San Diego State just has enough to move past UC Irvine. Even though San Diego State, they won their conference, and they were kind of, you know, really struggling to get to the finish line, I think they could recoup and get UC Irvine. What say you?
Yeah, I think they want to prove themselves. And I like UC Irvine's trying to come out and be strong, but San Diego State is trying to prove a point, and I think they would be able to move forward on their, because of their will in the first round.
All right, let's move to the south of the bracket. You have Baylor versus Winthrop. So are we both going with Baylor at this particular time?
Yes.
Okay. Why are we going with Baylor? Because Baylor kind of struggled. I don't even know if they could be a number 1 seed after the way they lost to Kansas. They could not guard the paint, and they could not guard the pick and roll. So why are we going with Baylor against Winthrop in the first round? And are they a strong number 1?
I would say this. Coming off a loss to Kansas, a game that they didn't think that they played well or they had an opportunity to win, I think they were going to right the ship. And I think that would be perfect for them. 1 through 16 is so hard. I mean, it can happen. It happened last year. But I think Baylor would just be have too much talent for Winthrop. And I think that's why I would suggest that they move on in the tournament.
Okay. Yeah, they got to redeem themselves at this particular point. After Kansas is like the number 1 overall seed, but they did play them tough, but they showed some weaknesses. So we'll see whether or not there's a team in that bracket that could expose that weakness. Got St. Mary's against Rutgers. And who are you going with in this one? I kind of think I know who you're going with.
Very difficult situation. St. Mary's is a very good team. They play hard. But Rutgers is tough, man. They played hard in the Big Ten. Nobody really expected them to make a run the way that they did. I mean, they took down some very tough teams. I think they beat Illinois. They beat Ohio State. They beat a number of teams. And I think they had a medal for it with Ron Harper Jr. leading the charge. So I would select Rutgers to move ahead.
Yeah, I'm picking Rutgers, too. They had a good season. The Big Ten is pretty tough, and they had a lot of teams in this particular bracket. I believe 10 teams in the tournament. And usually I would say, you know, there's too many Big Ten teams in, and there's not going to be a lot of them left when it's all said and done after the first week. But I think the Big Ten was, to me, probably the best conference, one of the best conferences in there. Pound for pound, the best conference in there. Next game on tap is Ohio State versus Stephen F. Austin. Who you got against this one?
Stephen F. Austin is a very good team. They play a certain kind of way, which might cause a problem for Ohio State. But I think Ohio State has something they want to prove, and I think they would advance from that standpoint. But I don't think they can take this for granted. They still have to play hard and play the way that they do. The key would be for them to play, have a strong defensive effort the way that they normally do, and which has allowed them to be upset better teams. But they'd have to come out strong that way, and I think that would be key. But I would choose Ohio State to win.
Yeah, this is one of these classic upsets of 12-5, but I don't think it happens here. And so I would go with Ohio State also. I know you're picking in the next one, Louisville versus Vermont, the number 4 seed against the number 3 seed. And am I wrong on this?
You mean I'm choosing Vermont? Is that what you're saying?
You're not choosing Vermont on this one. I think Louisville is your dark horse to get to the Final Four, to be honest with you.
We'll see. But, yeah, no, I would choose Louisville because you already know they're loaded. They have a strong center. They have a freshman guard, and Mr. Johnson is nasty, and they have a supporting cast that's pretty good when they want to play. And I think that this is a way to kind of get it going, move forward to kind of win a couple games. And like anybody else, they're talented enough. They match up well with a lot of teams because of the size and the versatility. They even have a 3-point shooter out there. So I think they could do some damage. So I'm going to choose them to move forward.
All right. Yeah, I'm choosing Louisville, too.
You sure?
To move forward. This is going. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. The next game is going to be Cincinnati's nightmare, Virginia versus Cincinnati. I can see Virginia just grinding Cincinnati down to a pulp and winning that 56-50 game in Cincinnati. Your thoughts on that? I'm picking Virginia on that one.
Normally you would think otherwise, but this Cincinnati team this year, to me, played with a little bit more nasty flavor than normal in past. And I think that they played hard before because of what their coach grinded into them. I think this team tried to prove something with their coach being gone. They did a pretty good job. They were competitive. A lot of times I saw them beat Memphis. Memphis was kind of a shell of themselves. But in this situation, I think Virginia has been in the war. They may not be as talented as they were last year, and it's in Cleveland, which makes it even worse because it could be almost like a home game for Cincinnati. I'm going to still take Virginia to move forward.
Okay. Next game, Michigan State versus Bradley. I said in previous shows that I was falling in love with Michigan State towards the end of the season. I'm choosing Michigan State over Bradley, even though Bradley's had a great season. Going with Michigan State. What's your pick?
Yeah, Michigan State at the right near the end, right at the end of the year, they were starting to ramp up. And what I mean by ramp up, they were starting to kind of play some of their best ball against some of the better opponents. They faced Ohio State at the regular season finale, hosted Ohio State in Lansing, and they literally just handled Ohio State. They played the way that you expected, that you thought this team was capable of playing all year. And Ohio State had a big win earlier the week before, and they came in ready, but it wasn't enough. So I would choose I think Michigan State was ramping up, so I think I would choose Michigan State to move forward.
Okay. We both choose Michigan State. The next game on tap is Illinois versus USC. Who are you picking in that one?
This is a tough game. Illinois is really showing you something early on, but USC, they like to get nasty and dirty. And where is this game? St. Louis?
This game is in St. Louis.
If this game
home
was out
game
west,
for Illinois.
I would choose USC. USC. In their conference, I think they held opponents to less than, 42% field goal percentage, which is damn good. Teams only shooting 42%. But Illinois is on edge. They have a lot of players. This will be ugly because USC plays. They don't excite you offensively well. And if they can make it ugly, they could possibly try to win. And Illinois has shown that he can beat some teams. And to be so close, he'd have a lot of support. And I'm thinking it'd be hard for the USC to get off that clock change. So I'm going to take Illinois.
Okay. Next game on tap is Creighton versus Little Rock. And I'm going with Creighton. Creighton showed me a lot this year, and I think they could outlast Little Rock. Who you got?
Yeah, different time, different situation. I might be looking at Little Rock, but Creighton, I think, should win this game.
All right, let's take a quick break, and we will finish up the bracket with the East bracket right here on the Go Squad Sports Radio podcast.
Now, here's a little story I got to tell about three bad brothers you know so well. It started way back in in history with that rock. And me,
my team.
Been had a little horsey named Paul Revere. Just me and my horsey and a quart of beer. Riding across the land, kicking up sand. Sheriff's boxes on my tail, cause I'm in demand. One lonely BCIP. All by myself without nobody. The sun is beating down on my baseball hat. The air is getting hot, the beer is getting flat. Looking for a girl, I ran into a guy. His name is MCA. I said howdy, he said hi.
Welcome back to the Boom Squad Sports Radio Podcast. We're going through our simulated March Madness tournament. We just finished up the first round of the Midwest, the West, and the South regions. Now we're going to the East region, and of course that's in New York. And first game is Dayton versus either Boston University or Robert Morris. And who you got, Ice, on that one?
Yeah, I think Dayton will handle either one of these teams and move forward in the bracket.
Yeah, I can't see Boston University or Robert Morris having any answer for Obi Toppin, who the way things are going and the way they're talking, that he may be the number one draft pick coming out of college this year. Didn't see that coming. But they're comparing him to Amari Stoudemire, his body type and the way he plays, which is, I think, a great comparison. Next game on tap in Cleveland is Colorado versus Florida. I'm going to go with the upset on there, and it's not much of an upset, but I'm going to go with Florida. A lot of people aren't talking about Florida, but in the SEC, they were holding their own. And they roughed it out, and they got that number 9 seed, and I think they come out with a win against Colorado. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think about the time. I think about things like that, location. I think it would be hard for Colorado to kind of get up. I'm not saying they couldn't, but Florida has some tough games. Colorado is very, very impressive at times, but I like the way that the Florida guards. So I would go with Florida here as well.
Okay. This is a tough one, man. Yeah, Butler, who's a good team, but you have either Texas or Richmond. Any one of those teams, could they upset Butler at their number 12 seed?
I think they could, but I like Butler. They don't have a lot of outstanding five-star or four-star players when they come at you. That's been the mantra of Butler for years. Even when Chris Holman was there, that's the coach at Ohio State now. And they continue that dirty and gritty hardcore play. It's like Indiana-style basketball. And with that being said, mm-hmm. I would choose Butler to move forward.
All right. Yeah, I got to go with Butler, too, even though Shaka is probably coaching for his job at this particular point. Surprised that Texas even got into the tournament, but they got in as number 12 seed. Another Toppin is playing at Richmond, so it would have been interesting to see whether or not he could have led his team as a freshman to upset Butler. But Butler is really solid, strong, great coaching. Next game on tap is Maryland versus Akron. Got to go with Maryland out of the Big Ten. Thought they would be higher seed when they were playing during the season, but dropped a few games that were costly in the Big Ten. Who you got in this one?
Yeah, in fact, we saw better shooting, or they had more of a marquee player in Akron. I might look at them because Maryland is very susceptible to upsets, but I think they had too much talent mm-hmm. overall to defeat Akron. So I would go with Maryland as well.
Okay. Next game on tap is, this is going to be a tough one. It might be an upset. I don't know. Penn State, number 6 seed, going up against either North Carolina State or UCLA. Now, I would have picked North Carolina State over UCLA. I don't think UCLA is that strong. North Carolina State proving that they can beat teams like Duke and other powerhouses in college basketball. But with this game, I don't know if they North Carolina State or UCLA will have enough for Penn State at this particular point. So it could be an upset, but I'm playing it safe and going with Penn State. How about you?
Yeah, Penn State, is, you know, they have a little trigger racing going on. Depends on when you play them. I watch them defeat State. Get blown out by Ohio State on the road, and then they came back home and, you know, kind of gave Ohio State the business. If North Carolina State was there, I think they would play a better team, a better effort. But I'm going to give Penn State the benefit of the doubt. I think they will move on.
All right. Next game on tap is the number 3 seed Villanova against Hofstra, the number 14 seed. Smell the upset here?
No, Villanova has one is where it is located, being Albany. Yeah, I think that coach would have to he would run out of there if he lost that game. He'd probably retire. So, yeah, I think he would have an issue with that. So I would choose Villanova in this scenario.
Okay. Next game on tap is West Virginia versus Utah State. I got to go with, even though Utah State had a great season, got to go with West Virginia. Out of that conference, playing teams like Oklahoma, Kansas, Baylor, they've proven that they're a formidable foe going against any team in the country. What say you, sir?
Yeah, this could be a tough game because Utah State is the way that they play. But West Virginia, Mr. Huggins is probably would be throwing people in the walls, allegedly, kind of blowing smoke in people's faces. He really has them ready to play, so I would take West Virginia.
All right, so I'm going with West Virginia too. And is it safe to say that we're both going with Florida State, the winners of the ACC conference?
Yeah, it might take them to the second half for you to really believe that they can win and take a breath, but I think they would have enough to get by Northern Kentucky.
All right. So we've gone through the first round. Do you want to take a break and go to the second round, or you want to wait and get people in suspense of what we're who we're going to pick next week going to the Final 16?
Let's then we talk about some other things. So that means they had to come back next week.
A lot of the way you think, but that's why we're partners. Let's take a quick break, and we will come back and talk about some of the other things we talked about in the first 40, the NFL, some things in college sports, the NBA, Stan Van Gundy, I and the Brooklyn Nets job, not interested in the Knicks job. We'll talk about that when we come back here on the Goon Squad Sports Radio Show.
Like Miles and shit, like 60s funky worms with waves and perms, just sending. key beat to rap, what key beat to lock, but I'm cool like that. 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 I'm cool.
Queen be the chocolate, tap to my rap. She innovates.
Welcome back to the Good Squad Sports Radio Podcast. Man, we picked a lot of teams that I think there's more parity. Can we pick? I think we were going with the safe pick, but I think there would have been more parity. But, man, what could have been? Anywho, let's talk about some of the things we talked about in the first 40. Cam Newton got released from the Carolina Panthers. And I was saying, man, I know we talked about it earlier, but I know Black said he didn't think that Cam was going to get picked up this year. I think he might get picked up, but it may not be for a team that – here's what I really think. I think teams are waiting for the price to go down because Carolina saved about $19 million for Cam. You know Cam wants that money back, but I don't think Cam's going to get that. Teams are going to want him to prove himself that he is truly, truly healed from the foot injury and I think the shoulder injury that he had. And so they I think you mentioned that a one-year contract may be – something that he would have to look at to maybe humble himself. But I was thinking Washington, but they got Kyle Allen, his backup, and that kind of, to me kind of says something. Anyway, what are your thoughts about Cam Newton? Because, you know, I don't know about New England. Atlanta had a physical, gave him a physical to see whether he's there. And you know, we didn't talk about how Matty Ice might be feeling at this particular point, Atlanta bringing in Cam Newton. But what are your thoughts about Cam Newton being released, and where will he go?
I like Los Angeles Chargers. I just do. Mm-hmm. I know they like, I think our quarterback. What's our quarterback?
Tyrod Taylor,
yeah. I mean, I like Tyrod Taylor. I'm glad he's receiving this opportunity. I really am. But when you have a guy that is talented, and then if the foot is okay and he can throw the ball, why wouldn't you bring him in there on the cusp of trying to turn some things around out there and trying to make it happen, moving away from a Melvin Gordon and having a guy that come in that can really get it done, like – Cam Newton, who really wants to prove himself as well, think it'd be a good fit. So, again, they don't know if he what he wants until you talk to him. So I think it's worth a discussion, seeing where he's at, and maybe you do it an incentive-based contract. If he does well, he gets this amount of money. And 1 year, granted, some people might say he wouldn't take it, but they're not a bad football team. They could be moving forward. And they might be turning some stuff around. You still have Austin Eckler at running back that re-signed. They also re-signed Hunter Henry at tight end as a franchise tag. A lot of weapons to be to play with. And if I was going to take a chance, I was Cam Newton. That's not a bad place to be.
Hmm. Yeah, I. What do you think about Atlanta stepping in and saying, hey, we want to give you a physical to see if we're interested, and how Matty Ice might be feeling at this particular point, them bringing in Cam Newton?
Well, I think he wouldn't have to know that there's a chance that if he's healthy, it could be a problem. They probably would say it's your job to lose. I mean, your job's until, you know, unless you do something crazy. And maybe they're looking at the future, and the future could be like soon. So that's what that is. So I don't know. I can see that, but again, I think with the Chargers, it's like they lost their longtime quarterback. Tyrod Taylor is there trying to get it going. If he wins, he wins. But Cam Newton, it's all set up for him. I mean, Atlanta wants to win, but you're still fighting that. He's going to still be fighting that whole point of this is Matty Ice's team. It's his team, mm-hmm. and everybody knows that unless he does something crazy, the sky's the limit to me out there with the Chargers. And I think they might have better talent right now because we know that Matt, the quarterback, doesn't throw to his wide receivers. Anyway.
Yeah, because he had a rough two seasons. Rough two seasons, and it seems like, you know, you had a Super Bowl team. It was built to win, and he just couldn't deliver. He couldn't find Julio Jones when he needed to find Julio Jones. I mean, he was just inept as a quarterback. And maybe Atlanta was like, maybe we need to put a fire under him to let him know that we're looking at our options, whether it's through the draft or Cam Newton. But I'd be very surprised. The way the Chargers are kind of looking, and they haven't been kind of, in my opinion, they haven't really been looking for another quarterback. It seems like they're settled with Tyrod Taylor, and that he probably knows that system. They know what they have, and they're kind of rolling with it. So this should be really interesting to see whether or not teams will just wait to the last minute to say, listen, we want to bring you in, but here are the conditions, and here's the money we have to offer you. If you prove that you can do what we expect for you to do, then we'll talk about long-term contract. And I don't know. I like Tyrod Taylor. I thought he got a bad rap in Cleveland, and I think maybe he found a home and with the Chargers. And I thought that they should have pulled the plug on Rivers a long time ago and put Tyrod in, but they waited and did not sign Rivers. Rivers is with the Colts now. And it just doesn't seem like – to me, I think the Chargers will be better suited to get another experienced backup that wants to come in the role and say, hey, I know that I will get a chance to start, but I will settle for a backup role behind Tyrod Taylor if things don't go well with him, and to not spend that much money until they find the quarterback of that franchise going into the future. I think Tyrod Taylor is that guy who's going to be the holdover and, you know, just hold on to that spot. Don't make too many mistakes. And then when a better quarterback comes along, a younger quarterback, maybe via the draft, then we can, you know, talk about changing and bringing them in and bringing them up through the system. But I don't know. It just seems like, to me, Cam Newton has a lot of baggage. I'm looking at him with writing these cryptic kind of you know, tweets and all this other stuff. It just doesn't seem like he's quite right. It just doesn't seem like he's quite right, or whether or not he has his head in the game and whether or not he can lead a team. And so I question that. I do question him with quarterbacks. Jameis Winston, can he lead a team? I think that he has to be the one that says, you know what, I have to go and come in this backup role because I haven't proven myself in Tampa Bay. Of course, you had the coach changes and maybe the offensive changes, but a quarterback who's a quarterback can adjust to those changes and still perform. And you throwing 30 interceptions, well, 30 touchdowns, even though you had a lot of yards. And they're saying, you know, that he could have had 9 more interceptions with that 30. Jameson, what are his chances, man?
He could, but I think he has to really take a true look at what happened last year, because I think one of the things that pushed him out the door, besides Tom Brady, is when he was asked about it, he said, I know what I need to do. It was almost as if he was like, I know I need to be better, but he really didn't take responsibility for the way the interceptions were coming out. So I think that could be an issue with him, and maybe he needs to have a reality check, and maybe this offseason at some point will show him that. And he needs to really get back to the basics and the fundamentals. And maybe he needs more of a coach to kind of show him the teaching the certain ways to play, and not just tell him to pat him on the head, tell him, oh, don't worry about it, we're going to keep moving. I think that's going to happen there. But, again, in that regards to when you look at Cam Newton, I think this is a perfect opportunity with the Los Angeles Chargers because he hasn't played. And then he got discarded. He just got thrown away as if he wasn't wanted. And granted, no disrespect, I like Tyrod Taylor, but I don't know if I'm putting all my eggs in that basket. This is a team that's supposed to be set up to try to still win some ball games. They struggle with Phillip Rivers. If you were able to get some things going, I mean, you still have a quality defense out there. And when everybody's healthy, you can make moves. And if I'm Cam Newton, if you can get past the money, this might be where I want to be. And I just think that is because if Tyrod Taylor doesn't work, then what do? You pick up Andy Dalton. Do I want Andy Dalton or
another quarterback
Cam
out
Newton?
There?
Yeah, do I want Cam Newton or Andy Dalton? I'll take Cam Newton all day long. I healthy Cam Newton.
It to me, and maybe you can you know debate me on this a little bit, but it seems like teams are getting away from players that are locker room that are going to have cause issues in the locker room. Getting away from Antonio Brown Tampa Bay just, you know, put out a statement maybe earlier this week saying, you know, we're not interested. You know, there were some reports that Brady's going and he wanted to bring, you know, AB. And Tampa Bay's like, nah, because Bruce Arians had some experience with AB and says, you know what, I don't want that drama. I really don't want that drama. We're trying to build a winner. We got 1 or 2 years to build a winner here, and we don't want any disruption. You got Cam Newton, who seemed to be a disruption where a new coach coming in who has a quarterback, a franchise quarterback with Cam Newton, says, you know what, I'm going to opt to go with a safe bet with Teddy Bridgewater. And it just seems like teams are – they saw what happened with the Raiders. They saw what happened with other players who are disruptive in the locker room. It seems like I know Black mentioned this earlier, the ownership or the organizations are saying, you know what, we want folks to kind of stick with football. We don't need the outside drama of somebody who has issues with the team, how it's run, all this other stuff. I'm looking at Odell Beckham also. We want to get away from that drama, and we want football players to come in and just play football. What are your thoughts about that?
I see those points. I think a lot of that is valid, but I think the Antonio Brown situation is very specific. He had a number of chances, and he continued to kind of spiral down, just down the hills hard. And they tried to do everything they can they could. He went to Oakland. He was in New England. We talk about some other places, but he just kept having. It was like he was just having issues. He's over here at a barbecue. He's choking somebody, allegedly. He's doing some things with other people. So I'm just saying there was a lot of noise around him. And I think he had a lot of opportunities. So, but he did a lot of stuff off the field. And then at that point, the NFL, even when he came back, almost begging, I want to play. I really want to play. Yeah, no. And I think the best thing to do is maybe sit a year out if he ever comes back. Since a year out and understands what's going on, and maybe he gives him time to reflect and really get his faculties in order, get himself together, and maybe counseling whatever he needs to do, and maybe he'll have a better appreciation as to how he needs to behave. So I go with that. But again, with the Cam Newton thing, I think it's more of the money or misunderstanding, because how can you – I mean, you say about the tweets. So, I mean, the guy was – he played somewhere for a long time. Of course he's going to be a little upset. And you can't blame ruled a new coach over at Carolina for not wanting to bring you back because he's trying to restore order. I don't think it's really saying how bad Cam Newton would be, or he might be too much of a overpowering figure in that locker room. So I see that. When you want to start clean, then that's what you do. I don't think they owe Cam Newton anything in Carolina, but as a new coach, I don't have a problem with it. You bring in a very young offensive coordinator, and you don't want him to be intimidated by anyone. So,
right.
I can see that. So I think it's more about the individual type situation than it is them not wanting certain people in, because the situation that happened with Cleveland, they're allowing the player that got suspended for the rest of the year that had to issue with the quarterback. Yeah. That was the case to me. Garrett would have been out some more time this year, next year. And they brought him back because they think it was just a tough situation. So I just think overall that it's individual. And it depends on how bad you want to win. I mean, you tell me, as much as I like Tyrod Taylor, I mean, they didn't block for him in Cleveland, and they went the one way. But then again, as a safety valve, I would rather spend the money as a decent safety valve with Cam Newton at a lower price, and he's healthy. Cause he can play when he's healthy. It's just whether or not he wants to play with a good team and start to use his skill set better than he did in his latter days in Carolina.
Well, the two questions I think about when you just said that is, would he be willing to take less? And can Cam Newton do what Cam Newton used to do that would be beneficial for this team? And those are the two questions that, to me, is out there. Because we mentioned earlier on the first 40 that, you know, the Washington coach, Ron Rivera, that would have been an ideal situation to bring Cam to Washington, but he decides to get Kyle Allen. And so maybe it was a financial thing, but that to me says a lot that you don't go with the guy that you've been riding with that took you to the Super Bowl. You're going with the backup. And maybe it's because, hey, I don't want to deal with the drama that this player brings. I don't want to deal with the attitude that this player brings. And so I kind of see that following Jameis Winston also. Do I want to deal with this attitude? Do I want to deal with the off-the-field issues that come with this player, especially if he's not playing on that first string? Do I have to have people monitor him to keep him out of trouble? Do I want to go through all that, you know, just because I want this guy on my football team? And I'm just starting to see that organizations are like, you know what, we don't want that press. We don't want that attention. We want attention on what we're doing on the field. You see a Pat Mahomes and what he's doing with that football team. Not bringing any negative outside or things that he's doing off the field, all that negativity. They're concentrating on all the players that are there, concentrating on what they need to do to be a great football team. And the proof is in the pudding. As soon as Kareem Hunt had his particular issues, they dumped him as fast as they could and continued to move on and move towards the Super Bowl. So that's why I kind of brought up the issue, whether or not teams are saying, is this player really worth it? Will they take less money? And is it worth our time to kind of put this player in this place and then they become disruptive? That's why I think a lot of people are talking about, there are some people, not a lot of people, Cam Newton going to New England. I don't think so. I don't think – could he be under a Bill Belichick? And could they come to an understanding? I'd be very surprised if that happened. Andy Dalton, I know you're in Ohio. What's happening with him? Are teams really kind of saying, hey, we want to wait until, you know, this virus kind of, you know, kind of simmers down? Or does anybody have any interest in Andy Dalton at this particular time?
I think the Patriots have interest. They could have interest. Because he's the type of guy that can take care of the ball. You put some people around him, he can do some things. The other part, too, is you can wait until after the draft. Andy Dalton's going to be around. He's not going anywhere. I mean, you can kind of see what you have, show some things out, and he's going to be around. Same thing with Jameis Winston. But with Andy Dalton's biggest problem is he just really, I mean, he did not have a lot of the weapons that he needed around him, and he kind of faltered a little bit. But, he's a decent quarterback. And I think with the right coaching, he'll be even a better quarterback. I mean, you look at the situation where the Titans picked up Ryan Tannehill, who was in Miami for years, and everybody wanted to blame him a lot from being down there and their struggles. But you turn around the situation where he can thrive because he doesn't have to do everything by himself and is more a tighter type of controlled environment at quarterback, and he flourished. I think something could happen with Andy Dalton with the right pieces. And he's coachable. He's the type of guy that listens well, and he follows what you need him to do. And I think that's the kind of guy that you can see by the fact that when they picked up Hoyer, that's the kind of guy New England's looking for.
So by New England picking up Hoyer, do you think they picked him up as a steady backup in case the stadium doesn't kind of perform the way that the New England, expects him to perform following Tom Brady? Or do you think New England is going to be looking for another quarterback to bring in at a cheaper price, whether it's through the draft or through free agency?
Well, I think you hit it on the head. I think Hoyer is not so much that he's a starter. He's consistent. He can come in. He can keep the things going like that. And then that opens the door, as you said, for other opportunities for kind of for New England to kind of weigh their options. If they don't sign an Andy Dalton, I thought it might be an Andy Dalton or Hoyer, and maybe they go one of the other two ways. But I think they might surprise you and they'll take a gander or something wild. You look at, you know, when you look at Jacoby Brissett, when they picked him up, nobody really expected him to kind of go to New England and turn lights out, but actually he played well in that system and moved forward to a starting position now. Both, and he still is in the league for a long time. I can see them making – I've been reading some things and comparing some notes. I can see them fooling everybody. So we have these two guys. We have you know, Stidham, and we also have Hoyer. And then they'll come out the box and do something crazy like this. They'll move up one or two spots, and they'll do something that no one expects. They'll choose a quarterback, and the quarterback they'll choose will be Love from Utah State just because. Mm-hmm. They'll come out the box like that. Nobody will ever see that coming. And he was available. I could see them doing something like that because they know they have to get younger. They know that the game is changing. You mentioned the game changing for more mobile quarterbacks. What better way than New England to make that transition to have one of their own and groom him the way they want him to and surround him with younger players? I could see that happening in New England.
Yeah, because New England played against three of the best mobile quarterbacks in the league last year, against Watson, Mahomes, and Jackson, and all of them took New England's lunch. So you got to start thinking that New England's like, you know what? It's something to these mobile quarterbacks that we can't defend against, we can't beat, and this is the way it's going. And they gotta face those teams, especially Houston and Philadelphia again. Also, they may have on the schedule, I haven't seen the schedule, with Baltimore. They got to contend against those AFC teams. And those AFC teams have great quarterbacks that can move the ball, move the feet. And if you're not on that trend, then you may be on that losing side of the scoreboard with Kansas City, with their mobile quarterback coming in and coming back against the San Francisco 49ers and beating them in the Super Bowl. So they have to do something to get some high-powered offenses. What do you think about the Bears kind of loading up on defense and not really kind of making that a big of an impact or splash with getting players on the offensive side of the ball, more weapons, if you will?
Yeah, we talked about that before. I just don't know why they have not. I don't care who the quarterback is. We talked about it before. You have to have somebody else for them to throw to. And the key is not to go sign out an older skill set and Jimmy Graham at tight end. I just didn't understand that at all. Even if you bring in Nick Foles, you have to have somebody over there that they can throw the ball to. And you have Robinson and Allen as well. And I understand that those guys are decent, but they're struggling in that way. They're struggling at running back as well. They released Taylor Gabriel. And then you mentioned on defense, but they, as I said earlier, they lost two linebackers. They lost, a linebacker, and then they also lost outside linebacker, then Leonard Floyd, the new safety, Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. You get stronger because Quinn had 11.5 sacks for the Cowboys last year, but you paid him $70 million over 5 seasons. That's a lot of money. That was a lot of money. And you just, I mean, it's good to be good. It's great to be solid on defense, but you have to be able to score some points. You're shaky at quarterback, and you bring in another guy that maybe can only play half the time, and you don't address the factor of who they're going to throw the ball to or who's going to run.
Right.
It's almost as if they're just kind of taking one person out, putting something on, and still expecting it to be better. And it's not, I don't see it working. I don't think they've done enough.
Yeah. It's, listening to the folks here in Chicago, some of the radio stations, I haven't listened to them in a while, but when the moves were happening, it's this kind of crying out to say, what about the offense? We know we have a solid defense, but what about the offense and what is going to happen to Trubisky? And so, it just seems like they're just loading up on defense. Maybe they're trying to set themselves up to get some ballers out from the draft or to make some moves when the draft comes, but it just seems like they're neglecting that offense and it's just not going to happen. Segue a little bit. ESPN2 is showing the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight, And I just turned from it, man, because I don't want to see that again. it just wasn't interesting to me. I don't know if you're sitting there watching it, but, you know, the first round came on, I'm like, been there, done that. I don't want to see this again. But let's take a quick break. We'll talk some boxing and something that had us cracking up on the first 40 about the postponement of Wilder and Fury 3. And we had a good laugh on it. You need to watch the YouTube video. That good laugh. We'll take a break on the Goon Squad Sports Radio podcast.
They call me Drac. Here I come, baby. I ain't gonna bite you. I just want you to hang on. All right.
Welcome back to the Good Squad Sports Radio Podcast. It's your truly Puma, along with Ice Water. If you miss any part of the show, especially our picks and our simulated March Madness picks, we got to the pool of 32. We'll get down to the Sweet 16 next week. Stay tuned. Maybe some surprises. Click right back here to Blog Talk Radio and listen to our first few picks in the first part of the show. But we'll talk a little bit about boxing, man. ESPN has been showing a lot of the different bouts, which I commend them for. And they're showing the Mayweather-Pacquiao bout. But there was a fight that was supposed to happen in July that's not going to happen due to the coronavirus, Wilder and Fury. And we were having a good chuckle. I know me and Black were having a good chuckle earlier on the first 40 about this might be just what Wilder needs. Because to me, honestly, the money would have been good for that July bout. But really and truly, I don't think Wilder wanted any parts of this anytime soon. Maybe they'll back it up till December. Your thoughts on the postponement and the because they could have had, they've been having bouts with nobody in the audience. And with UFC and all the other stuff, so it could happen, but it didn't happen. They postponed it. So, and I think it would have been a good thing in July to have the bout. You got everybody at home. You have a captive audience. It'll probably blow pay per view through the roof. Everybody getting their check from the government, putting it down on the fight. What are your thoughts about it, man?
You know what? You know, much as I love you as a brother, sometimes you make me, I wonder, what the hell is he trying to cause ruckus? Like Uncle Ruckus from, yeah. Anyway, I just
no
want
relation.
Uncle Ruckus. Anyway.
No relation.
Y'all doing it. Anyway, but I think because you gotta look at it, the fight is about the money game. It really is. fighting game is about money, boxing it is. So I don't think there's no way, heck, they would have done that. Those that have had the fights with those people in the stands, that's one thing. But the whole point of this, and the last time they fought Tyson and Wilder, Tyson Fury and Wilder, was based, it was because it was an event, and it drew a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
and they won. And, right. and you're talking about long-term boxing promoter who loves every dime he can get, like everybody else, Bob Arum, and then, of course, Al Haymon on the flip side with PBC. Yeah, I don't see them just doing it to entertain people. They want all the money. They want it all. So that means you have to.
They want the game and a pay-per-view.
Yeah, you want it all. That makes sense. I mean, it'd be simple just to try to entertain people, and then you can have a fight somebody else. But this type of fight that, even though a lot of people are saying that Fury is probably going to walk through him this time because he knows it's the third time, people are anxious to see it. So therefore, you would definitely have to do the due diligence, take your time, and promote the hell out of it, and get your money. And that's what it's all about. And I think that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, I know we made fun of it, and you make a lot of sense about they want more money, and they would probably get more money with a crowded arena and the pay per view and advertising and all that other stuff. It makes sense. The other thing I think we were talking about is that I truly don't believe that Wilder healed from that beatdown the last time, physically and mentally, more mentally than ever, because the first fight was, to me, I thought Fury won. I've been saying that on the show all along, but the second fight left no doubt. And Wilder was not used to being beat up on like that in any of the fights he's been in. He's usually the one beating up on somebody else and knocking them down and a TKO or whatever. And I think with his mentality and the way he's kind of presented himself, I think that's a mental scar that will take a while for him to get over. And I think July was too soon. Maybe in December when things kind of settle down, or maybe next year. You never know. But I think that this is going to take a while. And I think, to me also, the longer that it takes, the more that's going to wear on his mental, his mentality going into this fight, because he has to think about it over and over again, be reminded of it. And you know how it is when, some people know how it is where you lose something or you lose really bad. It's on your mind all the time, and you can't wait to get back in. But are you prepared, or will you have the skill set to change the results this time? And so do you think he can come in with the mentality, a different mentality, different skill set, and do you think mentally that probably he's just not ready, or it's just kind of like he's been beaten mentally by this guy?
See, I think it's kind of hard. It's hard to say. I mean, nobody can really change their style, their skill set that quickly. I do think the delay will help him. That's what he wants to do. He's going to have to do, change that up. But I don't think it's fair to say that we don't know what he can do. Man's 42-1-1. We just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I think that, I'm not saying he's going to come in and be a top-notch boxer, but the one thing that does happen when he does throw his jab, he's capable of making things happen. And like Tyson
right.
Fury changed his style a little bit, where he got bigger, I can see Deontay Wilder, because the other thing too, I think the key here, one of the keys, is Mark Breland. Mark Breland now has the opportunity to so-called redeem himself and to say, look, you need to go back to boxing just a little bit, or throwing a jab. We ain't even gonna throw boxing in here, but throwing that jab and setting that right hand up off of the jab, because when he does that, then he's shown you can do it against DeVern and some other people that he could have a better chance. Who knows what's going to happen? No one knows. But I think this is the way to kind of work through that if he can. And you got to give it up. Tyson Fury is a hell of a fighter. He's shown us that. And, before, people were on the fence about it. But I don't think it's a shame losing to that guy. Again, like you said, people are pumping up Anthony Joshua, who got pummeled by a guy that nobody expected. Then he came back and won his title because he was safe. And everybody's putting him back on the pedestal. He's like number two in the division now again. I mean, I don't get that part. I really don't. But, you know, that's how the boxing world works. If they don't like somebody, they punish them. I mean, this is Deontay Wilder. You know, some people don't like him. They don't like the way he fights, and I get that. But then he's the only guy that will stand up and fight the number seven ranked contender in Luis Ortiz, who's the only two losses he lost to was Deontay Wilder. And nobody's ringing his phone. Nobody's ringing his phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just saying boxing is fickle. It's funny. Styles make fights. So I don't know. We'll just have to see. But I do think that Wilder's a lot stronger mentally than people think. And I think he's going to do whatever he can. He's willing to do whatever it is. Even if that means he had to change up a little bit because he desperately wants to. He wants to knock him out of his opponent. But I think more than anything, he wants to win. And I think that's the kind of guy he is.
Yeah. And so I got another question. Follow me here. I've been looking at, and I never thought Tyson Fury was any kind of a great boxer. But going back and looking at his fights, this is why I didn't think he was any good as a boxer. He's so awkward, and his body type doesn't kind of give you the appearance that he's a skilled fighter. And so, and then looking at him going back to Sugar and what they saw in him, Emmanuel Stewart saw in him, they must have saw something, some skill set that he had, that it makes it, the opponents look at him, it's kind of a deceptive kind of, he's a deceptive fighter because he doesn't look like a fighter. He doesn't look like he has any skill set. He looks goofy. He looks awkward. He looks like he can't fight or he doesn't know what he's doing. But that kind of, to me, puts the other guy's guards down, and him, I'm talking about Tyson Fury, is able to come out and do damage because he does have a skill set. It may not look like, you know, some of the fighters that we have seen that have great skill sets, like a Muhammad Ali, like, you know, some of these fighters that really have great skill sets. They look the part. They act the part. They are, you know, tacticians in the ring. He doesn't look like that, yet he can pull off some tactical things and strategies in the ring that really throw off his opponents. What are your thoughts to that?
Oh, yeah, he doesn't look the part at all. We know that. But I think that he's providing a false perception because he's shown you already what he can do. I mean, as much as I watched the Klitschko fight and thought Klitschko didn't really fight hard, he found a way to get that done. And then I think what you mentioned over with Sugar, you know, changing over to Sugar Stewart, the point of that was thinking that if he could get stronger and be heavier, he could lean on Wilder. It's something that they didn't think he was strong enough to handle. And by him moving up in weight, it showed you that. And then it's like, well, we're going to rough him up. We're not going to allow him to kind of come off and be strong and be tough and use that right hand. We're going to eliminate that by leaning on him. And then he walks away, we're going to hit him. And they basically diffused what he likes to do. And they were first. That's the other part, because Wilder lately has not been first. He's been sitting back waiting, trying to time.
Right.
But against a guy like Tyson Fury, it doesn't work. So it was an excellent game plan, which is why he switched to Stewart, because his previous trainer, who's a good friend of his, was saying to Fury, just move and stay away from him, and you can beat him with your left hand, which is your jab. And this time he was like, nah, I think I can really beat this guy. I can take his heart. But I have to eliminate that right hand. And what do you do by eliminating the right hand? You lean on him. You beat him up any way you can. You hit him with elbows. You headbutt him to be in a position to take him down. And he can make all the excuses he wants to. But I think he literally wore him down because of his size. And he did what he had to do to win. And I think that's brilliant. I think he's crafty. When he wants to fight, when he's in shape, when he wants to fight, Tyson Fury is very crafty. So I think that's what happened.
Something else I want to switch boxers. I was watching Terrence Crawford. ESPN's showing all these different boxing matches. And I saw this fight before against Terrence Crawford, and I forget his opponent. But I didn't realize that Terrence Crawford was like 32, 33 years old, which he's in his prime. But he doesn't have a lot of time to get these big, big money fights. With these other solid fighters to make his hay, before he it's time for him to retire. What are your thoughts on that? I did not know that he was, like, you know, in his early 30s. I thought he was in his late 20s and, you know, and just getting into the prime of his career. Do you think it might, you know, with the delay and all this other stuff, the impact of the coronavirus and them not really scheduling fights, is going to hurt Terrence Crawford and take away some of the time that he has in his prime to kind of showcase his talent and his superiority in the ring?
It might take away from how long he stays around, but I think he knows the time is now. He's 36-0, which is why he wants to get at it. Notice the first thing he said, he was backing off of it. They were going back and forth for Errol Spence. But then now it's like, you are the guy. I want you. I want to fight you. I want to fight you. I want to fight Pacquiao. The interesting point there is Sean Porter said we were friends. We weren't going to fight. But I think he knows that Sean Porter could cause a real major problem. But if he loses, then will Terrence Crawford, at that age, get another shot? He probably will, but that's a lot to go through, which is why I think he's calling out the best right now, because he wants to remove all of this, because he wants to remove all of the stuff in the way, and he wants to go for the guy. Because, again, maybe he's saying, yeah, time is running out, and I need to, if I'm going to step up and lose, might as well be for the, get all the money.
So you think Sean Porter would be a difficult fight for Terrence Crawford to win?
I think he's a fight. I think he's a very difficult fight for anybody. I really do. I say that. And
yeah.
I'm not saying he's going to win. But you saw what he did with Errol Spence Jr. He was right there.
Right, right.
Granted, he got rocked, and you saw what he did. Keith Thurman was backing up. First time I ever seen that in his career. Ever. Sean Porter is very unorthodox. He can fight anyway. But you don't want that. And it takes a special kind of guy to beat him, because he's going to test your will. You can say that you can fight all you want to. Keith Thurman started literally backing up and walking away. He didn't want that smoke, as they say. He started walking away and trying to stay away, stay safe. He will test your will, Sean Porter will. He will test your will. And granted, Terrence Crawford is a tough fighter. But it's one thing when you got a guy coming for you like a bull, head-butting you. You got to catch him right and leaning on you and throwing shots right back at you. I think that could be a very tough fight. And not saying he's scared, but I think Terrence Crawford knows. He said he wants to. He's like, yeah, we don't need to fight. He knows what it could be like. He watched Errol Spence go through that hell. He watched him go through that hell. And it's like, do I really want to do that? Let me go ahead and go after Spence and go and get this money.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That was a tough fight for Errol Spence. And during the later rounds, he kind of pulled it out against Sean Porter. I remember Sean Porter and Terrence Crawford saying that, you know, they're friends, they wouldn't fight each other. But that may be a fight that, you know, he would have to take in order to recoup. But could he recover from that? I think you're absolutely right. That's a great point. We got about a minute and a half left in the show. Any party shots?
Yeah, party shots is, for the most part, want to thank the men and women on the emergency teams and the medical staff helping everybody out in the country and around the world, man, because this thing is crazy. I never thought in my life March Madness, I'd see March Madness canceled. A lot of people are being diagnosed with it. It's serious, and I hope everybody does take it seriously. And I just want to thank those people that are risking their lives and, you know, their livelihoods to make us safe. And I hope this ends well and soon.
Yeah, I got to double down on that. Folks in the police force, a friend of mine, I sent her a note saying, hey, please be careful out there. Also, a friend of mine who's a nurse, some of the nurses that I know. Also, folks that work in grocery stores and these restaurants, people that have to be out there. My daughter works at a pre-K where a lot of folks who are working don't have any babysitting, and she's out there. So, you know, my thoughts and prayers are for those folks that they keep safe. So, yeah, I double down on that. We'll be back next week to come up with some other sports topics. All of you stay safe out there. Until the next time, we will see you again. Take care.